Good morning. My name is Jim Malarkey. I am Chair of Humanities and General Education at Antioch University Midwest. I've been asked to talk to you today about a program that we offer that I think is pretty unique and very important. And so what I'd like to do is tell you a little bit about how it came about. When I left my high school and went on to college, I joined a debate team, and on that debate team, we were studying U.S. foreign policy and the role of presidential power. And one of the things I discovered is I knew nothing about the world. So when it came to foreign policy, how was I going to learn about the different peoples and cultures? And at that time, the issue was the Vietnam War. And as I began to study, I began to understand more and more about the different theories about how to win that war and how to pursue our foreign policy. But when I asked our officers about the Vietnamese people, I asked them, who are the Vietnamese people? What is their culture like? What do they want? And I couldn't get an answer. My mind started to work at that early age. I was only about 18. And I began to do some research in the library, and I stumbled across other books about other people in other places, and suddenly I became enchanted. I discovered that people who go out and travel and learn and write are anthropologists. And it occurred to me that's really what I wanted to do. I didn't have a chance to learn about anthropology in high school. I was too busy studying the required books and reading the sports pages and goofing around as a young man do. But this woke me up, and so what I did was apply for programs in anthropology and eventually went to pursue that. And that took me across North Africa. I spent 3 years studying in Morocco and Tunisia and Egypt, and then Algeria for two of those years. And this became part of my graduate work in anthropology, and that opened me up to an understanding of the world that was very complex and differentiated. Algeria, as you know, is an Islamic country. After that, I finished my dissertation in France, where I studied for a year, and then went to Lebanon. Now, Lebanon was a shocker because I knew nothing about the Middle East, nothing about the conflicts in that region. And when I began to talk to people, I learned that each view of history was enclosed within the particular identity of the group that this individual was a member of, and that the conflicts that continued day in and day out, year in, year out, that seemed so irresolvable, had something to do with the culture, the religions, and the history of that region. And I realized that in the United States, we had it lucky. The back of kinship was broken as we traversed the ocean and took our places into different pockets of American society. It's easy for us to preach democracy in that situation, but it's a little bit hard for us to transform the rest of the world in that way because they are still very much a part of the history that created them and gives them a sense of identity and meaning. Now, how does that lead to the curriculum? I was hired to teach at the American University of Beirut. This was 1979, the year of the hostage crisis in Lebanon, and there had been a civil war in Beirut, in Lebanon, from 75 to 76. I didn't realize what I was getting myself into. And of course, there was the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, many refugee camps in Lebanon, some of which I visited. So I began to get educated about the Middle East, and in the same time, what I was hired to teach was in a very unique program. My field was anthropology. I did teach some anthropology courses, but I was asked to teach in a new curriculum called Cultural Studies that introduced the students at AUB, as we called ourselves then, to the great books of the Near East and West. It was just a four-course sequence, but they studied Judaism, Christianity, Islam, and the early philosophers of Greece and Rome, and some texts from medieval and the Enlightenment period and the modern era, just to give students a sample of the great works. And all students in the program took that course. Well, the situation didn't get better while I was there. Left in 1984 through an evacuation. My wife and our little son came to America, and I was lucky to get a job at Antioch College. And at Antioch, I started teaching anthropology. But the really great thing was that I was suddenly out of a war zone, which I'd been in for near 5 years, into a peaceful village where people were very creative, trusting, and dynamic. And I thought to myself, you know, we can create different kinds of worlds as we think about who we are and why we're here and how to work better together. But when I started teaching my classes and eventually was asked to start a weekend program for working adults, I discovered something overwhelming. Our students seem not to know any history. They didn't know about cultures outside our borders. And yet, at that very same time, we were plagued by international crises. We had an emerging ecological crisis that was visible even at that time in the mid-80s, and that we were in a process of globalization in its early phases. And it was obvious that with the development of technology and the possibilities for travel, there would be more interaction between us and members of the rest of the world rather than less. How can we equip our students? So the question I asked myself, which all educators really should, what is it that our students should be learning in order to address the challenges of the world? And even further than that, in order to feel fundamentally a part of that humanity. I saw two roads. There's the road of distrust, conflict, war, vengeance. I saw that big time. I know what we can be like. I'm not a romantic in that sense. But also there's another road that's more constructive, where people can learn from one another, grow from that experience, enlarge their perspective, and work better together. It's that kind of reality that I feel as an educator I want to help produce. So at Antioch, what we did was create this. We thought, okay, you know, people talk about the Midwest as only following the East Coast and West Coast. But we thought, well, that's okay. Here's what we think students should learn. Let's try it out, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. If it works, fine. It actually worked. We had 9 intrepid students who started in the program that we called the World Classics Curriculum, because I thought that the Near East was too narrow and Europe too narrow, which was the focus of our program in Lebanon. We designed a much more expansive program. We situated it into a humanities majors, and students, we took them around the world through time, through the many different civilizations, so they'd understand how these civilizations arose. How did they make it happen? What was the culture, the philosophy, the daily life? What were the art forms that were created? The drama, the music, the cuisine. How did it work? How did civilization work when it works? And how did it decline, disappear, or disperse? We wanted to look at that too. So what we situated was the following arrangement. The great books from different civilizations, but also a study of the social history of those civilizations, so that the works themselves were not isolated from the world which gave birth to them. We also did another thing. We situated our study of those works in the context of our civilization. And this created, as you can imagine, some great controversy, argument, and questioning about who we are, how we came to be, where we are, and what our future ought to be. And it's been a really invigorating program where students learn about the peoples who inhabit the planet along with us. They learn about different possibilities for having and being and knowing and doing. And they realize that for all of their life, we've been enclosed in something of a bubble, for some bubble gum, maybe. It's hard to move around. It's hard to get outside of that. So we expose them to books. And I know for many people, books may seem passe. But for us, hey, books are windows to the world. And whether you get it online or you get it in fact, the books are here. These are the books that we use. I want to give you a little sample of these ideas. Africa, of Water in the Spirit, about how African societies embody a certain wisdom that interrelates the culture with the natural environment and neighbors with one another. Lots to learn from looking at the African world, which is far more than what we see in the media, which emphasizes poverty and war. God's Myth of Ancient Egypt. Everyone has a fascination with the ancient Egyptian civilization, but what did the people really think? Not just what did they build, pyramids and mummies and all of that. The Epic of Gilgamesh, one of the oldest stories ever told from ancient Mesopotamia. Deeply moving. Gathas of Zarathustra. None of our students that I can recall knew anything about Zoroastrianism, which is the ancient religion of Persia, and still influences Iranian culture today. Believe me, have a look and read. These are the words of Zarathustra, the revelations he received from God. Has he understood God? Fascinating. We move into India and study the Mahabharata and the Ramayana, two key classic texts of ancient India that still shape the soul of Indians today. How can we possibly interact with people from different cultures if we don't know their own internal mental makeup? And what inspires them and what drives them to be who they are and makes them proud of their culture and civilization. The Upanishads, oh yes, one of the great little jewels of literature, and the Buddhist scriptures, because as you know, Buddhism also arose in India along with various forms of Hinduism, which is not one religion. It's many, many, many varieties. We study the Tibetan Book of the Dead, so we see Buddhism in its various manifestations, the Mahayana as well as the Theravada Buddhism. Of course, the Dalai Lama is from the Tibetan tradition. We move into China and study the great works of Confucius. And I remember growing up how people used to make fun of Confucius. Confucius say this and that and the other thing. It was always something silly. What philosophical thinker of this period of time is more profound than Confucius? And no wonder he's influenced China for so many thousands of years, even in spite of the fact that Chinese themselves at times have tried to repudiate him. The Tao Te Ching, many of you probably know the Tao Te Ching, of great solace. It's good to keep at your bedside to help you detach. If you feel like a bubble, you've been burst, right? The Tale of Genji, one of the largest novels ever written, and in fact the first, by Lady Murasaki, Japanese writer, Japanese culture, different in some ways from China, but has inherited much from the Chinese. And even, this is a little jewel I just discovered, The Tale of Q. Haven't met anyone who's read it. It's the classic of Vietnam. So when I was asking myself the question at West Point, who are the Vietnamese people, what is their culture, I wish someone would have said, read The Tale of Q. It'll tell you something you might like to know. I recommend it to you. Now, Persia, one of the great texts is the Shahnameh. Look at that. Fat volume. You have to like big novels. Beautifully written. Tells all about the history of Persia from the point of view of Persians. All Persians read these things. In addition to the poets Hafez and Rumi and Sa'di and so forth. If we want to understand the Iranians, read their literature. Read the works that make them swoon, that give them a sense of tremendous pride, conveys the wisdom of that civilization. Of course, we cover the Bible, the Hebrew scriptures, and the New Testament in various forms and have great discussions about how that literature came about, what it meant to the people at the time, insofar as we know, and, of course, today. The Quran, okay, of course, as you know, a very important book for Muslims around the world. We study, in addition to the Quran, the Hadith and the works of Sufism, that represent a tremendous mystical branch of Islamic civilization. This all forms part of the curriculum, and then we segue into the Greeks and the Romans, the Iliad. Some of you have read these things in various forms, the Herodotus, the Bacchae, Euripides. We do plays. We don't just sit and jaw all the time, because that divides people. We also do things together, which is plays of different cultures. The Bacchae is an Euripides play we do every year. And students are astonished that they can actually perform in front of an audience. They do it better than I am. Plato is, of course, a mainstay. Everyone should crack their head on the great philosopher and his student of renown, Aristotle. We read the Nicomachean Ethics. And I have to say something to you. The Nicomachean Ethics is the first book I ever read of philosophy. I was in the military academy prep school, and I pulled it off the shelf, and I couldn't pronounce the word, and I thought, what is that? And I started to read it, and I have to say, I think it influenced me throughout my life. The Aeneid of Virgil, foundation myth of the Roman Empire. And the Romans, of course, are very instructive for Americans. We tell our students, it didn't just happen there. It's not gone. The Roman history, the Roman philosophers like Cicero and Seneca and others were the things that our founding fathers in this country read and reread. Their books were dog-eared because it's from them they acquired an understanding of history and culture and values and how to integrate diverse peoples. They did. And the fact that we no longer read them makes me wonder if we really know who we are as Americans. I have serious doubts. Ovid, The Metamorphoses, is a tremendous treasure of stories, many of which you remember from the myths you studied as a child. And of course, this is the book that I didn't realize most of our founding fathers' favorite book. If you go to libraries around the country, you'll see many editions of this up to the end of the 19th century, and then we stopped. You wonder what it is, don't you? Cicero, On Duties. Boring title, boring cover, but blistering thought and analysis, very relevant to now. I think it's even more relevant now than ever before, if we would but dare to read it. Those are just a few books. To understand who we are and where we are, to me, it's vital to know where we've come from. We as a people on the planet, because it's from coming to understand how others see the world that we are more able first to respect them for that knowledge and experience, but also communicate more effectively and address the problems that we face. And again, it's always clear in my mind there are two alternatives. We either are moving in the direction of more conflict, more distrust, more violence, more vengeance, or we're moving in the direction of greater understanding and greater collaboration and greater mutual appreciation. And it's a struggle. It's a struggle for education. So I see our World Classics curriculum is not just a world of books for people to get credits, to get a degree and get out as fast as they can, but rather it's an opportunity for them to realize that there's a great wide world open for them to learn in and to become acquainted with and to travel and meet people and to be effective in making changes. It's a World Classics curriculum with a purpose and sometimes with an attitude. That's what I have to share with you today. Thank you for your attention.